to give us the summary on the first bill we're going to hear.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
God, I love that.
Madam Chair. House Bill 2103 clarifies and further defines qualification criteria for non-urban long-term enterprise zone, local property and business income, or corporate excise tax exemption program, extends the sunset to December 31st, 2004, provides alternative qualifications criteria, establishes the long-term enterprise zone fund, and defines use and limitations, takes effect the 91st day following adjournment. This program is a rural counterpart to the strategic investment program used primarily in urban zones. Created in 1997 to sunset in 2002 due to the inability to predict long-term loss of revenue impacts. Current program tax incentives include 7 to 15 consecutive years of full relief from assessment of all property taxes, exemption from corporate excise income taxes or local property taxes until the facility is placed in service, and state corporate excise tax credit equal to 62.5% of gross payroll against the tax liability upon approval from the governor. Zone sponsor is generally the local government. Applies to 39 Oregon non-urban enterprise zones. Qualification criteria: minimum investment of 1 to 50 million dependent upon location, minimum number of new employees after 3 years, an average annual new employment requirement, an average compensation at or above 150% of county's average annual wage within 3 to 5 years. Proponent agency states that extension of sunset is necessary to allow sufficient time for potential enterprise to incorporate into private enterprise strategic and financial planning cycle.
Okay, we have Mr. Burton and Mr. Fish, I believe, that are here. You want to come forward, please? Good afternoon, and go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Witt, members of the committee. My name is Mike Burton. I'm the Assistant Director of the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, and this is Art Fish, also at the department. I thought I'd take a minute and do a quick overview of the Enterprise Zone program in general, which will be relevant to both this bill and 2131, talk about the history of this bill, and then and very quickly talk about what we'd like to do with this bill. I think Mr. Slam has covered most of that already. The Enterprise Zone program was created, I think, in the mid-'80s. To provide an incentive for communities seeking economic and community development. Within qualifying zones, property taxes are exempt for investments, qualified investments within the zone. Industrial wholesale and, at the option of the local zone sponsors, motel developments may receive property tax forgiveness for 3 years. If the business pays exceptionally well for the counties they build in, the business can, upon negotiation with the zone sponsors, receive an additional 1 or 2 years of exemption. So in a nutshell, that's the Enterprise Zone program. In 1997, Nucor Steel came to the legislature and asked to establish a set of extraordinary or extended benefits for extraordinary investments in rural or distressed communities. Nucor was initially looking at building a steel mill and looked at a number of sites, including Clatsop County. Ultimately, it decided that they were going to build a mill in Coos Bay, and that's the point at which discussions happened in the last session. The intent was to provide long-term extended benefits because Nucor was going to build a huge plant, a huge investment, a huge tax-generating entity, and employ a lot of people in a very distressed community. The legislature bought off on that and approved a package of benefits, which are summarized in a sheet that I've attached to my testimony. Quick digression. Also attached to that testimony is a map of the currently qualified extended benefit zones, rural long-term tax increment zones. And then on the back page, and I'll get to this in a minute, the criteria for receiving those benefits in the qualified communities. So,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you. I just want to interrupt the witness long enough to understand the diagram, Mr. Burton, that you shared with us, because you seem to be drawing a distinction between enterprise zone eligible areas and extended enterprise. And I want to make sure that I'm following you and understanding what your diagram says. Would you help me with that?
Representative Johnson, Chair Witt. The map is clearly a map of the state of Oregon. All enterprise zones in the state are shown on the map. Those counties that meet the criteria for the extended extended rural benefits are hatched over, so they're shaded. And the criteria, I guess, are not shown on this sheet. They're basically summarized in the on the summary sheet. But so does that cover the question?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay. So in 97, the legislature approved the program. In 99, Speaker Simmons, then Representative Simmons, still Representative Simmons, I guess, was responding to complaints that the reality of one of these large projects landing in some Oregon communities was just unimaginable, and proposed a set of criteria that essentially established a sliding scale and defined exceptional investment on a relative scale. His perspective was that the kind of investment that would be exceptional in Elgin was a lot different than the kind that would be exceptional in Coos Bay, which was in turn a lot different than the kind that would be exceptional in the Portland area. So in 99, the legislature adopted that sliding scale. And as I mentioned, the back page, that kind of shows you what the criteria are relative to each of the communities that is currently eligible for the benefits. So the intent of this bill is to clarify this fairly new process, and basically it reorganizes sections of the bill, lumps things together, clarifies some of those criteria that make up the sliding scale, and we think most significantly extends the benefit. So far there has been one major investment that qualified for this program. That was Roseburg Forest Products for a facility they built in Riddle. A number of other areas have made inquiries, are investigating the possibility. At this point, we have a prospect that's looking seriously at Klamath Falls or Roseburg in terms of Oregon sites, but also looking at sites in Idaho and Washington. And this would be potentially the second time we would use this program. With that, I think I'd yield to Mr. Fish if he'd like to fill in any details.
Are there any questions for Mr. Burton? Okay, Mr. Fish, you want to... Yeah, Representative Johnson.
Mr. Burton, I'm sorry that I need so much clarification on this. You're really talking about the rural long-term enterprise zone benefits that are going to sunset, and the intent of this bill is to ask that be renewed. But you have made reference a couple of times to extended benefits. Are those separate and distinct from each other, or are the extended benefits embedded in the enterprise zone activities?
Chairman Witt, Representative Johnson, my terminology was sloppy in that. They are separate and distinct, but I'm using them for the same thing here. There is an extended benefit that's part of the regular program, and that's the fourth or fifth year. So I've been inconsistent in my terminology. What we're talking about here are the rural long-term benefits.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Fish, do you want to give your testimony? Or you want to comment on what Mr. Burton said?
Thank you, Chairman Witt, members of the community, or members of the committee. My name is Art Fish. I am the Enterprise Zone Coordinator with the department, but also on rotation working for the Department of Administrative Services on some other projects that I get involved with, and still have multiple phone numbers and so forth, too. But I have nothing really to add except to emphasize that the main point of this bill is simply to extend the sunset date so that there is greater time in which to use some of these sliding scale opportunities for potentially attracting sizable but relatively sizable types of investments to some of the counties that you see on that map that really have some considerable economic condition problems, that besides having an enterprise zone, but also having that county the county measures of unemployment or income that allow them to get that crosshatch in the map. And for these extended or the long-term abatements from taxes. Thank you. And I'll happily answer whatever questions that I'm needed on.
Questions for Mr. Fish? Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Review with me, if you would, Mr. Fish, what the process is for having an enterprise zone declared.
Representative Johnson, Chairman Witt, members of the committee, the actual designation of an enterprise zone is a choice made by local counties and cities. They apply whenever we have zones available, sometimes they terminate and have to be recycled every 10 years. And it's an application to the department for designation of a zone. There has to be at that time certain local economic hardship types of thresholds that have to be met. Though large portions of the state can certainly qualify for enterprise zones. Does that answer your question, or are you more looking at what makes some of these counties more special than others?
You've touched on it, and it's a question that even though I've had experience with enterprise zones, it's never occurred to me to ask. Are there a finite number of enterprise zones that can be operative at any given time?
Yes, Representative Johnson, Chairman Witt, members of the committee. The number of enterprise zones is set by statute. Currently, the number that the statutes would allow for is 48. 44 are presently designated.
And do you have particular openings when the applications can be received? Is there a call for application or some standardized process? How would the next four be filled? Is it first come, first serve, or a demonstration of a unique fact circumstance?
Representative Johnson, Chairman Witt, members of the committee, the remaining four are they're remainders of a new 10 rural zones that were allowed by the 1990 session. Six, of course, of the 10 have been designated, leaving those four. We have until, or I should say the Department, Economic Community Development Department, has until I think about 2004 when more zones start to recycle to actually designate those, but the choice of when to create a round to actually, the statutes basically say the department or the director has to open up a round to designate them is a discretionary choice of the director. Mr. Burton might be able to comment on when we might see some of those four get used up.
Chairman Witt, members of the committee, as Mr. Fish has suggested, in the last session we were given the authority to make available 10 more enterprise zones. We did a round in the wake of that that authority and established all six qualified zones that applied. So at that time we felt there was no need to move ahead. Basically everybody who wanted a zone and was qualified had a zone. At this point we have indications from three communities of interest in pursuing other zones. We may sometime in the near term open it up for another round.
Are you at liberty to say what three communities those are?
Be fine with that. Chairman Witt, Representative Johnson, members of the committee, the three communities I have on my list are Stanfield, Gold Beach, and Clatsop County. And Clatsop County is discussing how they would structure a zone. There's already a zone in Clatsop County at Juana, and how would they cover other parts of the county?
Thank you. Questions?
Other questions?
I am.
Representative Monis Anderson.
Again, a freshman question regarding enterprise zones. If there's an existing, if you designate a new enterprise or these new criteria that you have, can existing corporations then be eligible for these property tax breaks?
Representative Monis Anderson, Chair Witt, members of the committee, this program, both programs, both the regular 3 to 5 year short-term exemption that's been around for now 15 years and or this very long-term special situation that is the subject of House Bill 2103, both of those are perfectly open to companies, both domiciled and existing and operating in Oregon of any size relative to some of these investment numbers, or new startups or new companies that are relocating or setting up new operations here. under the traditional program, in fact, roughly two-thirds at least, if not maybe closer to 70% at times, have been existing businesses that are simply having to expand their workforce. Others are new companies, sometimes small, sometimes larger firms, creating a new operation in the zone.
Okay. Other questions? Tell me, in view of the fact that a tremendous amount of energy, I know, is put into this Nucor opportunity, and nothing came of that, despite going in and amending the law and giving them this extremely beneficial arrangement on taxes. And I think it was more than property taxes, wasn't it? It was income taxes, too. Why do we want to go in and have a program that gives these kind of long-term property and income tax breaks? How does it benefit us as a state?
Chairman Witt, members of the committee, I've been doing this business for 17 years, and I've been involved in economic development in a number of ways. And it's been my experience that the one thing that companies considering locating in a community ask consistency is, are there enterprise zone benefits available? I used to work in Central Oregon, where there was an enterprise zone in Redmond. There wasn't one in Bend. And I consistently saw companies make a decision to locate in Redmond instead of Bend, partly because of the enterprise zone benefit that was available to them. I think the fact that there's a lot of open land in Redmond and there's not much in Bend was also a factor. But this is one benefit that's been around. It's available on a federal level. It's available around the country. And companies that are looking at locations are typically aware of it and typically ask about it. It can often make the difference between whether or not people will locate a community.
What did Nucor end up doing?
Chairman Witt, members of the committee, Nucor, to my knowledge, has not yet killed the Coos Bay plant. However, they ended up in a dispute with the seller of the property, Weyerhaeuser, over hazardous waste concerns. It is possible that that was a reflection of soft market conditions for the steel industry, but on the face of it, they told us the issue that was standing in their way was their inability to close a land transaction with the seller of the property because of hazardous waste issues.
Hmm. Wasn't Nucor looking to collapse Kenai for a period of time?
Yes, they were.
If we did nothing on this bill, what would happen here?
Chairman Witt, members of the committee, the bill will expire December of 2002. It will sunset and cease to exist.
So which specific programs would cease to exist?
The rural long-term benefit.
So you'd still have the short-term, is it a three-year or a five-year, I'm sorry? Three-year?
It's both. It's three-year and potentially four or five-year given pay levels of 150% of county average wage.
So if we did nothing on this bill, the long-term program would cease to exist on December 31st, 2002. Doesn't this program create a situation where foregone property taxes, and to the extent that you have foregone income taxes, are passing an increasing burden on to other areas of the state?
Chairman Witt, members of the committee, under the post-Measure 47 environment, that is true. They don't actually increase the burden, but they don't allow for an increase in revenues, which would otherwise take place.
Yeah, don't they, for example, like education funding, to the extent that you don't have property taxes coming in for education, you're going to have presumably less dollars going into the school funding formula, and it's a shifting of some burden. Not only do you have less dollars, but it's a shifting of some burden away from rural taxpayers and rural property onto that are in an enterprise zone onto other areas that are not in an enterprise zone, such as Washington County.
Chairman Witt, members of the committee, as you pointed out in these hearings 2 years ago, and something I hadn't considered up to that point, that is true, because of the state support of the basic school revenues. When revenues decline in one place or don't increase, the rest of the taxpayers in the state pick up the burden.
Okay. In terms of using this program, which will go up to 15 years, I guess, in terms of a property tax, is it property tax exemption? Okay.
Chairman, members of the committee, yes.
And it also will offer certain income tax exemptions.
Chairman, members of the committee, the income tax provisions are negotiable.
Okay.
As are the term of the property tax. The term of all of them are negotiable. They will range from 7 to 15 years and be set by the zone sponsors, I believe, when the zone elects to opt into this program.
Okay. To the extent that the property taxes are foregone for that extensive period of time, could you, is there some evidence that the department can point to show successes it believes that have been achieved in terms of new investment into these enterprise zones? I mean, can we see a list of specific successes that this program has brought about?
Chairman Witt, members of the committee, in terms of the long-term rural...
Yes, sir.
We have an announcement. We have a qualified and negotiated beneficiary in Roseburg Lumber Company, but they have not yet begun to be exempted. I don't believe they're in production yet. So as of yet, there have been no benefits nor costs. But we could provide for you the projected cost benefit associated with that investment, the jobs, and whatnot.
Okay. Yeah, that we would appreciate that. And that's the only case to date under this program.
Right.
And the program went into effect in 97.
Right.
After the 97 session. Okay, Representative Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You actually answered about 95% of my question, since we only have about one company that may actually utilize this, and maybe before the sunset we'll have more. But any company that did utilize this, this is the question, any company that did utilize this prior to the sunset, got approval, even after the sunset, obviously they would get the benefits under this for the duration of the agreement, right?
Chairman Witt, Representative Devlin, that is the correct.
Representative Crummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So how many, without the, kind of following up a little bit on the questioning that Chair Witt had with regards to the number of companies that would participate in this, how many companies would not come here, would not come to Oregon, would not go to rural Oregon without the long-term benefit? In other words, how many of them would, you know, the short-term benefit is enough for them?
Chairman Witt, Representative Crummel, so far the only company that we've talked about, actually I believe the second company as well, if it were to happen, are both Oregon companies. They're already here. They're telling us that the expansion would not take place without this benefit. There has been no opportunity to test that hypothesis yet with this program, since we've never really used it. There have been cases, I'm aware of cases where the standard benefit made a difference, where when it was not available, a company did not make a locational decision. Precision Castbar is the example. They did an expansion in the Tri-Cities area of Washington. However, an enterprise zone was established in Milwaukee, Clackamas County area, and the next expansion of Precision Castbar took place in the zone in Oregon. I'm aware of other projects that made the decision based on the availability of the regular enterprise zone program.
Representative Crummel, Chairman Witt, members of the committee, one thing I would add, this is limited not only to those counties but to enterprise zones, and the local sponsor is well aware that, you know, the company has the ability to take the 3 to 5 year, or to at least get the 3 year and possibly work on the 4 to 5 year. So to some degree, in making a decision on the part by the cities and counties to offer this or negotiate the agreement, because this is a local, this isn't an automatic type of benefit in this case, we would hope they would weigh that, you know, that would be an important option. And that's one reason why this program was limited to enterprise zones, so that there would be that fallback that, you know, as opposed to some areas without enterprise zones competing on this basis versus those with the 3 to 5 and so forth. So that would always be present as an option.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Walker, I think you had a question.
I did. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gentlemen, I was on the Trade and Economic Development Committee in the interim, and we traveled to Grants Pass. which is designated as an enterprise zone, and we visited a facility there that had just taken advantage of some new capital. Seems like it's a cabinet company. Are you aware of what company I'm talking about?
Chairman, Representative Walker, I'm not aware of it. We can find out. The Grants Pass Zone is a unique case.
Representative Walker, Chairman Witt, members of the committee, I think I'm aware of the one you're talking about. I mean, you know, there's quite a few of them, and you know, there's a furniture maker or somebody.
Yeah.
But they're using it's the typical three-year.
Three-year one.
And they're using that in the Grants Pass Zone. Mr. Burton, I think, was going to refer to another zone that exists in Josephine County, which is under some very long-standing statutes, was allowed by virtue of it being a federal enterprise zone, and then that could be created as a, as a state zone as well,
mm-hmm.
you know, get that overlay potential. But the Grants Pass Zone is a second zone that's been there now a few years, and yes, there is that major investor, and I think mm-hmm. that's a pretty darn good project down there.
Yeah, I was incredibly impressed on them with what they've done with the employment in that area. It's very economically depressed, and there is currently some timberland that is no longer in production. A whole mill is just shut down, and they're looking at developing that with enterprise zone money, and I think it's a great program.
Other questions? Representative Garrard?
Mr. Burton, I representing a rural part of Oregon, I'd just like to have you maybe perhaps emphasize the fact that we are, when we compete for business and enterprise in our rural areas, how important it is to have this from a competitive standpoint, that we are competing with other states and other different kinds of incentives that are offered to businesses. Some of us may not like incentives, but every area has them, and it's a real tough game of upsmanship trying to attract a business to rural Oregon.
Chairman Wood, Representative Garrard, maybe I didn't say it strongly enough, but in my experience, this is the one thing that everybody asks about. This is this can make a difference in business siting decisions. And when you're trying to overcome barriers like the fact that Klamath Falls is 4.5 hours from Portland, which is the closest major metropolitan area, that can be a real useful tool. There are costs associated with doing business in Klamath Falls in terms of transportation, in terms of, for some businesses, continuing education for particularly technical jobs. Klamath Falls is trying to overcome that, and part of the tools they're using is an enterprise zone to get it done.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Fisher.
Representative Garrard, Chairman Witt, members of the committee, I would just add that this program is, you know, we're not talking about something that we're entirely making up for a special company. Again, I think some of its origins had that feeling. But in a sense, you know, we have something here, especially after the 99 section, which was created to be accommodating to situations throughout the state in varying degrees. And it is what you call a statutory type of tax incentive. It would be, you know, it's established. And what this would do is provide a little more time for it to be established and perhaps made available and see what effects it can do in some areas that throughout the state that, you know, have some extraordinary hurdles to overcome in establishing newer type economies.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you. One of your comments and a note that was looked to me, I apologize for being outside for just a second, but you made the comment not making special deals for special companies, and the apparently there was an exchange while I was outside that talked about Nucor looking at Flaskanine. That was an instance, at least in my experience, where the ante kept being upped continuously within this program. I have two questions. Again, looking for reassurance that these are not special deals made for special companies, and then a little additional information on Nucor looking at Klatskanai.
Mm-hmm. That's
right. Representative Johnson, Chairman Witt, members of the committee. I did refer to the fact that back when this law was created, there was definitely a lot of you know, and I know that the new core saga went on for many years, and there was a lot of talk about what it would take for them to locate anywhere and so forth. And what I, you know, what I like about this now is this, you know, is, you know, there is some discretion, local discretion. There's the 7 to 15 that could, you know, that could be anything in there. There is obviously some room to negotiate on a local level, but it is an established parameters. And so we don't have any special companies in mind. I'm not aware of any. We're really looking to have this simply exist as it was made more usable by the 1999 session for a longer period of time into the future for future largely unknown investors anywhere.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
I was a port commissioner at the time that Nucor was in Columbia County, and that was not a time of unalloyed joy.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to me that when companies have the opportunity to shop between communities, pitting one community against the other, and shopping for benefits within a program like this, at the same time working communities in opposition, that is a dreadful scenario to get into. And having a state agency broker that competitive furor is not a healthy situation. So sideboards on these programs where companies know where the stops are is very useful.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a very good point. I'd be interested in getting some input on that, because I think what happens here, you get into this endless negotiation process, communities bend over backwards trying to meet these heightened demands. Community gets hope up that we're going to get this new facility that's going to provide all these wonderful jobs in a town that is depressed economically, and it leads to nothing.
Well, it leads to crushing disappointment. I was told of the Hoquiam High School band marching with the Welcome Nucor banner at the same time that they were in active negotiations with other communities. That's cruel.
Yeah, no, actually, I think Representative Johnson raises a very valid point, and you know, I would like to get some feedback from her point here that some of these companies that have come to Oregon and other states, coming in, talking about their interest in locating a facility, and then they want to negotiate, and they pit local community against local community, state against state. I think it's a very abusive process.
Chairman Witt, Representative Johnson, members of the committee, I agree wholeheartedly. I think an important role the state can play, and we do actively play, is trying to, well, we certainly hold the line on what we're willing to do. We're willing to, we make it clear to any company we're working with that given comparable economic circumstances with competing in-state communities, we will offer the same assistance. We will offer the same incentives, if you will. And, however, if we're dealing with a distressed community versus downtown Corvallis, we might be talking a completely different level of assistance. We'd absolutely be talking a different level of assistance. We're not willing to provide incentives in places like Corvallis where unemployment's at 2 or 3% and they're dealing with growth issues and not really interested in growth at all. We try to convince communities that a bidding war is destructive. However, we're not in a position to limit what a community can put on the table. But in terms of what the state will do, we're committed to presenting an even playing field for all of the communities in the state to the extent that their economic circumstances justify that.
Except we have a statutory structure that allows that bidding war to occur.
Chairman, I'm not sure I understand what you mean by that. We have statutory direction to focus our efforts in rural and distressed areas, and to the extent that we're talking rural and distressed versus not rural and not distressed, we actually cultivate different levels of assistance. However, if we're working with comparably situated communities, comparable in terms of the factors that go into our distress determinations, unemployment, income levels, poverty levels, and
those sorts of things. We are not, the state does not offer a differential. We don't participate in the bidding from the state level.
Chairman Witt, members of the committee, I described the enterprise zone programs, and I think it's true for both of the programs, both the short-term and long-term, as statutory. There are programs or tax benefits across this country that are very much open to negotiation. And, you know, this is what happens in other states. But this program, especially the traditional 3 to 5 year program, that is very much, I think, what the legislature tried to avoid in the past, is to create, and I think we're still arguing, still should, with this program, is create these parameters so that there is that stop and that there isn't this sort of wide open thing with regard to the enterprise zones. There may be other issues, other things that local areas will, you know, offer or try to do or whatever that, you know, you can't control necessarily. But the regular program is essentially very straightforward. You get 3 years more or less automatically. It can be 4 or 5 under certain circumstances. This rural long-term program that's been around in its current shape only about 1.5 years now is different. It does have some more openings or it's, you know, it's very extraordinary to be sure. It won't be used in a very large degree, but it still establishes very distinct levels of where the benefit could be. There's really only the 7 to 15 years and or additional conditions, and we largely would see local areas looking at what additional requirements they might impose. Some may not want to do that, and so there might be some relative benefit, but presumably we're mostly looking at larger investments where we're not looking at communities within the state competing with one another, if that answers some of the questions.
Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you've already covered this in the first part of your testimony, then we won't take the committee's time, and I apologize for being late. But I just am a bit confused. I'm hearing you say that you had a program that started in 1997, is that correct? And you've had one company that's essentially applied, but they're not up and running yet, so you haven't really experienced what it's like for them to be in it, really. And generally speaking, when a bill extends a sunset, it's a little line with a date change. Or if they want to make changes, it's because they've had some experience with the program and they've experienced some problems with it and they want to resolve those problems. But I'm seeing page after page of this is like an overhaul of a program that hasn't even really existed yet. So I'm trying to understand kind of where's the beef? What drove this? Who sat down and figured out all these changes and what's driving that change?
Representative Carlson, Chairman Witt, members of the committee. Yes, we, seeing the sunset, wished to introduce a bill that essentially did that, basically changed the date. There were some issues about where that sunset applied, so there was a little bit of language from the original sunset language that we asked to see clarified, and that was essentially it. But one thing to understand is when some of these sections were originally drafted, I guess they, you know, there's better ways of writing them from an income tax law perspective. And so a lot of what you see in terms of the size of this is a reflection of legislative counsel believing that this really needs to be written in a better way to conform with, normal tax law ways. But in essence, all that's really changing substantively would be an extension of 2 more years to try this program out further.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Is there anybody else that would like to give testimony on House Bill 2103? Okay, I'll close the public hearing, and I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2131. Gentlemen, you want to stay up there? It looks like you're the stars on this one, too, at least the opening stars.
Can you give me the right one?
Dan, you want to... Give us a brief overview.
A brief overview of House Bill 2131 reorganizes the provisions of the non-urban short-term enterprise zone sections within the Oregon Enterprise Zone Act of 1989, adds definitions, eliminates filing of county tax assessor form, imposes a potential application fee, gives flexibility to local enterprise zone sponsor, provides for a transition process for enterprise construction, allows the zone sponsor to impose additional conditions, eliminates one of the 2 requirements to increase employment, replaces definitions in the pre-certification process, establishes new duties for local government enterprise zone sponsor, aggregates personal property with real property for a new real market value threshold, authorizes zone sponsor to waive the $25 million minimum first-year investment requirement, defines substantial curtailment, adds provision for an additional exemption, and establishes operational cutoff date of June 30th, 2009. Takes effect July 1st, 2002.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Mr. Burton?
Chairman Witt, members of the committee, this is one that Representative Carlson's going to love because the whole thing is just house cleaning, and there's tons of bold print and italicized stuff in this bill. But really, it's just about house cleaning. The department was directed in a budget note from in the last session relating to concerns by county assessors that the enterprise zone program, the basic program, is too complicated, and there was a lot of work that they had to do that they didn't really feel like they should do. We have tried to clean that up. So responding to a budget note, we tried to take out unnecessary pieces of work. There are really three things going on in this bill. One of them is that housekeeping piece, and simplify the process. Two, because of that, as Mr. Fish represented in the last hearing, legislative council, I think, did yeoman work in restructuring a piece of statute that had been built over a 15-year period. And I don't want to offend anybody, particular people sitting right next to me, but in my mind, it's very complicated and kind of jumbled. A big part of what you see are pieces being moved out of the bill and back into the bill in another place so that the statute makes sense in terms of how someone would be dealing with the enterprise zone program. In your packet, there are a number of pieces, my testimony. And this is one where we have significant experience. The report attached to this is a summary of the benefits and the exemptions, by benefits I mean exemptions being allowed during the 2000 tax year, and the number of firms, jobs, the benefits to the state and the taxpayers that came from those costs, those avoided taxes. I think you had additional material that we left last time, including a description of the enterprise zone program and a booklet like this. I don't know if I got distributed again this time. You guys get something looking like this?
We provided a handout.
Okay. So you've got there's a description in this walks you through the program. If you want to go there, we can do that. I'm going to skip the general overview on enterprise zones this time since I did it a half hour ago. Basically, I said there are three things that happen in this bill. One is we do some housekeeping. Two, legislative council has done a good job of cleaning things up. Third, we're trying to clarify in terms of the concern of the assessors who's doing what. The parties involved in the work of administering the enterprise zone are county assessors and the Department of Revenue, both primarily because of legal obligations relating to larger tax issues, their normal roles. The local enterprise zone sponsors, we talked about a little bit about the process last time, but these people are the ones that put together an application and compete for a zone. They're the ones that hold up their hand and say, we want this thing. And this bill slides the non-statutory part of the work that the assessors have to do more onto those people, and then the Economic and Community Development Department, and it moves a somewhat larger piece of the work onto us in terms of administering the program. Believe it or not, that's what all that black bold print is about. The bottom line of this bill is to streamline the enterprise zone delivery system. The presumed beneficiary would be future business investors who would face a more customer-friendly process. And what we're hoping to do is they'll only have to do a little bit of work in addition to their normal stuff, their normal tax returns, tax filings, in order to apply for the exemption, or to claim it, and to verify compliance. They would still have accountability towards continuing requirements, and the local sponsor will have more work. In putting this together, it was our intention that it be a revenue-neutral piece of work. The first run-through, we were informed vociferously by Department of Revenue and assessors that in our simplifications effort, we'd overrun potentially some of our simplifications took away things that were really necessary. So at this point, Legislative Council is in the process of redrafting some of those amendments. And I don't believe they're available yet. A Legislative Council is here to talk to that. But we can talk about the substance of the bill, if you'd like.
All right. Why don't we, I see Dexter Johnson's here from Legislative Council. Dexter, would you mind coming forward, please? Dexter, if you'd basically tell us essentially what this bill, I'm not necessarily expecting everybody to read this bill, at least word for word. Maybe some of you already have.
I'm a freshman.
It's pretty impressive. But Dexter, can you tell us what we're doing here with this bill, and also maybe you can talk a little bit about the amendments that we're waiting on?
Okay. Mr. Chair and members, good afternoon. Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council Office. Basically, what this bill does is to reorganize the enterprise zone statutes in a way that is logical in terms of time, starting with the process of how a zone is created to how a business firm applies, what the business firm must do in terms of investing in property, and then there are provisions explaining what the exemption is when the investment is completed, and finally ending up with disqualification provisions and termination of the zone. So that in essence is what the bill says.
So is it correct to say that this bill simply restructures the language in current law to make it easier to follow and comply with?
Mr. Chair, that is correct. There are a couple of, because of the concerns mentioned over who does what in this kind of program, there are some changes, and there are some changes in terms of reporting forms. And I believe actually those, the amendments that are in process are going to particularly with the reporting that the property owner files, I think there will be some revisions to that.
Okay, Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I guess the question that immediately springs to my mind, hefting up this weighty tome, is if the program is nearly fully subscribed right now, and many of the companies that are participating in it are very sophisticated, why is it necessary? It appears that what you described as sort of a jumble and complicated bunch of paperwork has not been an impediment to folks going ahead and participating in the program. Why are we doing this?
Representative Johnson, Chairman Whip, members of the committee. There are 44 active zones. There are 4 potential new zones available. Each of the active zones has a 10-year life and will be recycled. Every year, a number of firms certify throughout the state for exemptions for their property taxes. So this is a very active program with a lot going on in it, and that jumble is creating problems for people to the point where we had a budget note in the last session telling us to sit down and talk to the people who do it and try to figure out a cleaner way to get it done.
Could we anticipate hearing from assessors today that are going to be sharing with us how necessary this is? Yes, we're going to hear from them. No, we're not going to. Okay.
We're going to be hearing from Mr. Noakes from Linn County, Representative.
Can I? Representative Johnson, Chairman Witt, members of the committee. I make it clear, we're not talking about trying to fix something that's broken, so to speak. If you wait around for something for that, you know, you're never in a real position to make improvements. And the position I guess I'd like to take a look at, I think in some ways we are trying in a way to organize this so that there's better clarity about responsibilities locally, shift more towards some local sponsor ownership of owning the business, accountability and verification of requirements, but also so that businesses, some of which are not, you know, the big sophisticated companies with accountants and lawyers, but just regular businesses, can face a little, you know, not that it's overly onerous right now, I don't wish to say that, but face something that's maybe more streamlined, that, you know, starts with a basic application, and from there on out, there's a claim that goes in with the property tax return, there's, you know, this one-page statement to verify compliance, which we already have administratively, and that's it. And that issues of personal property and so forth, they face very cut-and-dried issue about what's covered and what's not, and that there isn't, you know, all, a variety of some of the minutia. So there is, but some of that minutia has substance. So, you know, that's, so there's substance here as well as an opportunity to make the statutes as a whole, thanks to the, I think, the great work that Mr. Johnson has done, more digestible to the average person. Thank you.
Representative Knopf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, obviously you probably worked a long time on this bill, but tell me legally what happens if this bill doesn't pass.
Mr. Chair, Representative Phil.
Other than Dexter, I've wasted a lot of time.
In previous sessions, there have frequently been, notwithstanding that these are sophisticated businesses, there have frequently been businesses that haven't done things as right and have sought retroactive relief from the legislature, having failed to get the exemption they were expecting. And hopefully this bill will eliminate that.
But substantively doesn't.
Substantively, there's limited changes.
And there's no sunsets being, is there a sunset being extended here, or?
Mr. Chair, no. The sunset, as it currently is drafted, is written in a way that is inconsistent with the way other tax statutes are written, and this puts it more consistently with the way other tax, temporary tax provisions.
Is there a sunset in this current underlying law, and it's what year?
2009.
Okay.
Which is this bill provides as well.
Representative Carlson, did you have a question?
Just two quick comments. Okay. First of all, any time you do something that streamlines regulations and paperwork on businesses, I think it's a great idea. And second of all, whoever pulled this together, thank you, because this is a really good lesson.
Okay. Other questions? Mr. Fish, did you have anything to add on this bill? Or?
Thank you, Chairman Witt, members of the committee. No, I have nothing further to add, but would happily, you know, come back for questions or whatnot.
Okay, are there any additional questions for any of these gentlemen? Okay, thank you. Mr. Noakes from Linn County Assessor's Office. Welcome, Mr. Noakes. State your name for the record, please.
Sure. My name is Mark Noakes, and I'm the Linn County Assessor and Tax Collector. And Chair Witt and committee members, thank you for letting me express my, I guess, concerns. And I want to say up front that Linn County is not a full of economic development. And we have been involved in enterprise zones from day one and currently have a few of them still. One has gone through the full 10 years and just recently expanded into another one. So I'm here to tell you that enterprise zones work, but as far as this bill goes, myself and other assessors who represent counties that have enterprise zones have the concerns, and administratively it comes down to currently the current pre-certification before the firm actually does anything in the application process after they've done something is working, and we don't want to see it change, plain and simple. This bill pretty well tries to combine that process up front and before anything is completed and before anything really is known what actually happens. I guess you can talk about what you're going to do, but when all is said and done, what is actually done is oftentimes different. And I can give you an example, but essentially Albany's and Millersburg's enterprise zone expired in 1996, and we had a huge rush of firms that pre-certified in 1996 but did not make application until actually one firm as late as 2000, most recently. So it's a process for us that works. This was a firm that it was not an industrial property per se from the standpoint that the Department of Revenue or the state was involved in the valuation of this property. I'm not going to tell you that we would have forgotten about it, but a 4 years lapse of time had passed before the actual application was made. The second issue that we have a problem with, and I'm going to say that as assessors, is that if future investments are reported on an industrial reporting form, which is oftentimes how these properties are reported to assessors or the Department of Revenue, we will not have an opportunity to discuss issues with the business because the Department of Revenue may be responsible for the valuation, and the assessor, who is in charge of administering the enterprise zone program, may not have timely notice. This is an issue of workloads as far as assessors are concerned. After April 1st and sometime before we set the roll, October 1st, is a long period of time, but that is essentially the time frame that we're talking about, and we have to have that roll set by September 25th. The third issue that I would like to point out is that for all other exemptions, the application process comes after the property is qualified. And we're talking about a change here with this bill of one-stop shopping, making the application process be essentially the pre-certification and authorization all in one swoop. And something to think about. As proposed, any investment made in the first 3 years after the initial approval is given is automatically exempt. This is new. This is not current law. And I think that is a revenue issue that all taxing districts need to be concerned about. And the addition, as discussed, of all personal property, the lowering of the threshold from $25 million to $5 million before being required to add additional employees is a dramatic expansion of this exemption and will be a revenue issue that all taxing districts have an interest in. As an added comment here, I also like to say that as this bill proposes that if a firm does make an investment of over $25 million, they can decrease employment. And I thought the whole idea behind enterprise zones was to increase employment. That's all the comments I have today.
Mr. Noakes, have you talked with the folks from the department about this language in their bill?
Which department? Department of Revenue or?
No, the Department of Economic Community Development.
We, Chair Witt, committee members, I have, with the Assessors Association, we have what are called JTAG meetings, and we have expressed to Mr. Fish that we like the current application process, and that is the big issue. And currently, he has still combined the two.
Okay, so you've had discussions, and Mr. Fish has not, at least at this point in time, agreed to make changes to address your concerns.
That's correct. This issue actually started in 1999. This bill was first conceived 2 years ago.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you. If this bill doesn't pass, would it interrupt the program in Linn County?
Chair Witt, Representative Johnson, no, it will not.
Would it interrupt the program in any other counties where you've talked to your peer assessors?
Not that I'm aware of.
Thank you.
President Bates?
If this bill passes, will it make it easier for enterprise zones to be used by business, but more difficult for you to work with?
Chair Witt, Representative Bates, I don't know how to answer that question because I haven't had to work with this program under these rules, but it certainly looks to us that we would not be getting the information in the timely manner that we are currently used to getting it.
Thank you.
Other questions? You wanted to come up, Asina? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Noakes. Michelle, did you want to come up here? If you want to give some testimony, feel free. Yeah.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Hasina Squires. I'm here today representing the Special Districts Association of Oregon. I just wanted to, I feel like I don't want to leave Mark Noakes out in the cold on some of these issues. The Enterprise Program for cities and counties seems, and for economic development in general, seems to be a somewhat viable program. I know our courts are extremely interested in the program. Other taxing districts who lie within those enterprise zones are forego their revenue for this economic development. Cities and counties choose to create enterprise zones, not special districts. And so it is a collective effort on the part of local government to stimulate economic growth. We have some concerns about the bill as written. We've also received a set of amendments that I believe these were the amendments that were provided to Legislative Council by Mr. Fish from Economic Development Department. None of the amendments neutralize any of our opposition to the revenue impact, the further exemption of revenue that is currently not in statute, and so we're concerned about that. And at this point, oppose the bill.
Okay. Michelle, would you like to testify?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Michelle Deister with the League of Oregon Cities, and we really appreciate the Economic and Community Development Department's attempts to add clarity to the EASY statute. We support their good intentions. However, our concerns are echoed with what you have heard today, just in terms of additional personal and real property tax exemptions that would result from this bill. And, you know, as Hasina mentioned, enterprise zones are a useful tool for the communities that opt to participate in the program. However, we have to balance the job creation and other benefits of the zone with the revenue that's going to be foregone by our communities. And we did not have the opportunity to do that in this instance because we were not consulted about these substantive changes when this bill was drafted.
Okay, Michelle, don't the cities currently have to opt in to the enterprise zone designation?
Mr. Chair, that is correct. They do have to opt in. However, this bill does make changes that are not in the current program.
Okay, but cities are different from the special districts. The special districts don't have it. They just have to go along for the ride, basically.
That's correct.
Okay. But your objection, Michelle, is that the changes that are being made here in this bill, you're concerned have a negative impact upon cities in Oregon, and you haven't had a chance to consult with the department about those changes.
That's correct. We weren't consulted about these changes when this bill was being drafted, and I, you know, did have conversations with the department in trying to kind of get through what exactly was in this bill, and was told that they would be proposing amendments. I've glanced at them, and they don't appear to address those concerns. Maybe if they're bringing forward additional amendments, those would address the concerns that we have.
Okay. Any questions for Ms. Squires or Ms. Deister? Yes. Representative Garrod.
Christina, I think a special taxing district isn't going to be affected by the tax in an enterprise zone unless the municipality is already at its maximum. Isn't that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garrod, actually, in a hypothetical example in Klamath Falls, Klamath County Fire District Number 1, let's just say the city of Klamath Falls chose to create an enterprise zone, that business entity, whatever it is, the enterprise zone was created for, the Klamath County Fire District would not receive any revenue from the assessed value or the property taxes that business would pay. Klamath County Fire District would receive $0 in revenue.
Because the municipality is at its maximum taxing level.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard, no, because the city or the county chose to create an enterprise zone and provide a property tax exemption for the business.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And is the same true for schools? School districts? In other words, the school districts are, do they go along for the ride too?
Mr. Chair, I don't...
Of course, those taxes get flown into the state, so there's not a big repercussion, I guess, directly to the school district. And Mr. Burton, maybe you can comment on that.
Chair Webb, members of the committee. A substantial change took place in the enterprise zone program with the passage of Measure 47. Because with Measure 47, for the first time, the amount of revenues that any taxing jurisdiction received were increased with development. New taxes meant new revenues. So for the first time, the enterprise zone exemption meant that those revenues that were exempted were foregone by all taxing entities within the district, or whose district included the investment. I would differ in a small degree with Ms. Squires in that under rule since the 99 session, we have required that zone sponsors consult with all taxing districts within an enterprise zone area. So it's not like they're just along for the ride. They actually do have a voice in the process.
Consult with, but they don't have to necessarily follow their recommendation or request.
That's correct.
That would include school districts as well?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Bates?
Chair,
go ahead.
Just add to that, the department was very responsive in our request to include special districts in those conversations with when enterprise zones were being created, and it's been very positive from what I've been hearing from the association's membership.
Okay. Representative Bates?
One comment and one question, Mr. Chair. I would think that school zones are not going to be, school districts are not going to be affected heavily by this, because generally speaking, any drop in property taxes made up by general fund money is under the formula in the ADM. So schools probably aren't affected by these kind of things. We've had one in my district that happened, and we didn't see a net loss. But we had special protection where the other zones don't because we're a school district. I think that's the way it works.
Could you? I didn't quite understand that. Would you do that a little slower for my benefit?
I'm sorry. School districts are funded by local property taxes and state funds. Under ballot measure 5, as property taxes dropped, and the state had to make up any difference in those funds. So if a zone like this comes in and property taxes drop, the net effect for the school is still zero because more state funds flow in to make up the difference. So in that case...
Actually, Representative, that's not exactly quite the case.
Okay.
Because there would be less property taxes flowing in for education, flowing into the formula to make up the difference.
I may be wrong, but that's the way I understand.
So to go into the total amount of money that would be allocated for schools.
For the entire state, yeah,
right.
That's true. But
it gets spread throughout the entire state, but there's less money, presumably, or theoretically, less money in the pot to spread.
I would agree. The individual school district won't see a one-to-one drop on it.
That's right. They may only see less than 1% of the impact because it gets spread out throughout the entire state.
I agree.
Okay.
The question I wanted to ask, Mr. Chair, if I may follow, there seems to be some stakeholders here who feel they haven't had a chance to be a part of this process. Is it possible to bring those together and discuss these issues and bring this back, and it can be done quickly, or is this something that would take a tremendous amount of time to do?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bates, we have indicated that where our issues lie. I think the county assessors have been pretty clear with where their issues, what the issues they have with the bill, and it was our understanding that the amendments would correct those issues, but it doesn't seem to be the case. And so I'm more than happy to sit down and reiterate what the problems are as far as special districts concerned, but when we don't get the problem taken care of in the amendment, it's a little difficult.
Mr. Burton, you wanted to comment?
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Chairman Witt. I have a couple of comments. One is just an obscure point related to reductions in revenues. There would never be a reduction in revenue. There are increases foregone, but enterprise zone exemptions only apply to new investment. So there's no revenues being received now. Somebody builds something, and the enterprise zone exemption means the builder doesn't start paying taxes for 3 or 5 or 7 or 15 years. So that's one.
That's a very fair point. And you also can go further and make the argument that it ultimately brings in additional revenues and more income and more jobs and more income taxes and so forth.
Exactly. The second response I'd like to make is there is another set of amendments being drafted. You may have some notes on those or may not. I don't know what you're looking at. But we did not intend to create, we intended for this just to be housekeeping, clean it up. As I suggested in my testimony, we have been informed that we created problems for other people, and we're trying to address those with the next set of amendments. And we would be happy to share those with anybody who would like to be in the loop on that.
Okay. What I would recommend is that we'll have this bill back up in a couple weeks. And what I would encourage parties to do, and this would include Mr. Noakes and the folks that he would represent, that you would get together with folks from the department, Mr. Fish, Mr. Burton, or whoever you need to. Let's see if we can't try to address these concerns. I think we want to keep this program on track, certainly. We want to try to make it work a little bit better, both for business and for those government entities that have responsibility in terms of working with these programs. So let's try to go back into the language of this bill. Let's talk about the things that are of concern. Let's see if we can come back with some amendments that maybe doesn't solve everything 100%, but at least helps deal with some of the concerns that have been expressed today. Is there any other questions? Yes, come on up. Department of Revenue, I believe.
Thank you, Chair Witt. Excuse me, members of the committee, my name is John Phillips. I'm with the Department of Revenue. I hadn't signed up to testify, but I think it might add a little bit of information. We first saw this bill in December, and we've had 3 meetings with the Economic Development Department, Mr. Fish, and about issues in the bill once I was able to read through the whole thing. And we brought those concerns to them. Our concerns are in the administration. You know, how do we administer this? How will the assessors administer this? And so we've expressed our concerns, we've identified them, and it's our understanding, we even met with Dexter Johnson from Legislative Council to sort of understand what those concerns were and maybe talk about some alternatives. So we have been working on them, and we are working on them. One key thing that I think Mr. Noakes brought up is that the notice of when property is in service, and that is really the trigger. And we really think that's important to point out that there be a trigger in the process. If you streamline the process by eliminating the application, then what are you giving up? And is there another mechanism that can pick up that the function that application served? And so what's left in the bill as is, as written, is an insufficient trigger. And so that's one of the concerns we brought up, and we're working on that. And I haven't seen the proposal yet in the amendments, so we're waiting on that, but I just want to let you know we are working with the assessors and economic development on that issue.
That's good. It's good to know that, and appreciate knowing the Department of Revenue is involved in these discussions as well. Any other questions? Okay, thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody else who would like to testify on House Bill 2131? Okay, as I indicated, we'll look at having this bill back up in a couple of weeks, and hopefully we'll have some of these things ironed out between now and then with some new language. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2131. We had posted a work session today on House Bill 2104. However, there are some amendments that are not back yet, so we're going to have to postpone that until sometime next week.
Sure.
Is there anything else, committee members? Any questions? Comments, Representative Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the early release of the committee. And I just had a question, not a creature comfort, but what is our intent next Friday, because some of us may be leaving for Ashland?
What do we have scheduled for next Friday, Jim?
Nothing at this point.
I'll tell you what, we'll take a look at things on Monday or Tuesday and see if maybe we can cancel committee on Friday. I can't make that commitment yet, but I'll see what we can do. Okay. And I do expect all of you to tell other people in the House that the chairman of this committee let you out before 5 o'clock tonight. Because when I let you out at 7, you never complained to me, but you complained to all the other members, and I start hearing about it all the time. I'm getting this terrible reputation. I would point out that we are going to start on Monday at 3:15. So And I realize some of us have committees that sometimes will go later than that, but we're going to try to start at 3:15. So if you're available at 3:15, come down at 3:15, and we'll try to get the committee started a little bit earlier than normal, so we can try to conclude a little bit earlier than normal.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Girardi?
The committee would say to you, when this happens consecutively, we'll be happy to begin a new rumor.
Oh. Okay. We'll do our best. Okay, word.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.